the meeting of the Veterans Subdivision Committee to order. We don't have a quorum yet here, so we're going to have to wait on the minutes, approval of the minutes. But we do have Representative Greg Davids here to present a bill. Representative Davids, welcome to the committee. House File 226 is before us. You know how the story goes here, so if you'd proceed, that'd be great.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and when we do have a quorum, I'd be happy to move House File 226. Very simply what it does, it's basically amending a 2009 bonding bill appropriation and changing some language. So basically what happened in the 2009 bonding bill, there was an authorization to look at veteran cemeteries in northeastern Minnesota, southeastern Minnesota, and southwestern Minnesota. Funding for southeast Minnesota, however, was not made available. And so my bill does two things. First of all, it would make money available for a study in southeastern Minnesota. And then, Mr. Chairman and members, it also hones it down just a bit from southeast Minnesota to my original bill from 2009 that said we would go in Fillmore County. Now, the language, to give the department some comfort and others some comfort, if you look at page 2, line 2.4, item B, it says, for determining the veteran cemetery site in southeastern Minnesota, the commissioner shall give priority consideration to land owned and proposed for donation by the county of Fillmore. And actually, as we move along, we may actually, I found out, I was talking to Mr. Cleary earlier today, that there is a backup site in Fillmore County. So it'd be Fillmore County would be the proposed location. There is a, the county of Fillmore owns a farm inside the city limits of Preston that is a very a good site, and they propose to donate the land at this site. If for some reason, because of soil borings or some other reason, they were unable to get the deal done in Preston, there's also a site, the city of Spring Valley, Minnesota, has said that they would donate 100 acres in Spring Valley, Minnesota, to this project. I'm feeling quite good, however, that the Preston site would pass the necessary tests and so forth to become a National Veterans Cemetery. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I would stand for any questions. And I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman and members, you should have being handed out to you a packet of Fillmore County Veterans Cemetery support resolutions. There's a tremendous amount of support in Fillmore County. If you go down, you've got the cities of Fillmore County from Canton down through Wyckoff, and you've got the American Legions, the VFWs, and you have a letter in from the county board from many cities, and then we've got citizen petitions, and they have really taken off on this. They realize what a good thing this could be for southeastern Minnesota, and they have all jumped on board enthusiastically, Mr. Chairman.
Well, Chairman Davids, if you would move your bill, in talking with Mr. Cleary, it looks like because of the location that we're looking at, it looks like it might have to go to a bonding committee to be heard. So if you could make that motion and then reintroduce yourself as...
Mr. Chairman, have we been called to order?
We have been called to order, but okay. We do have a quorum now, but we'll worry about that as we go along here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I would move that House File 226 be recommended, passed, and sent to the Committee on Capital Investment Bonding. And then, Mr. Chairman, I would move the H0226DE4 amendment just to get the bill in the shape I would like, and the description I gave here earlier was to the DE4 amendment. Or it would be the bill as amended.
Members, are there any questions for the author of the bill? And I'm sure we've got some people in the audience that would like to testify also. Yeah. Any questions from the committee members? If we could have somebody from the Department of Military Affairs come up and Veterans Affairs, I should say, come up and give us their input or expertise on this issue, we'd appreciate that. And for the record, if you would identify yourself for the tape.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, for the record, my name is David Swantek. I'm the director of our current state veterans cemetery located in Little Falls. We've obviously been at this process for a while. Starting in northeast Minnesota, we've been working on identifying a suitable site in that region of the state for about 3 years now. Our concern with taking this from a regional focus to more of a county focus can be summed up in what's happened in northeast Minnesota. Between St. Louis and Carlton County, we've looked at 29 sites in northeast Minnesota to try to identify a suitable site for a state veteran cemetery. None of those sites at this point have proven to work out. It's a development of a cemetery is much more than walking onto a piece of property and looking at what the aesthetics of that property are. It's, you know, 10 feet below the surface on the entire property is also very, very important, just to the nature of the business that we'd be conducting on that site. I'd done a demographic study in 2009 that I presented to the Senate, at which time they had asked us to look at potential sites in southern Minnesota. I divided the southern part of the state into regions of southwest and southeast Minnesota, and determined that the living veteran population in those areas was significant enough to justify moving forward with a grant to the National Cemetery Administration, who provides 100% of construction funding for these type of projects. The state is responsible to front the design costs, but once the project is approved by the National Cemetery Administration and funding becomes available for that project, the federal government does reimburse the state for those design costs. The site in Fillmore County, which is being discussed, actually we I've been on site two times. We've presented information to the Fillmore County commissioners. We've also had Fillmore County commissioners and their county administrator up to Little Falls to tour the cemetery in Little Falls so that they kind of have an understanding of what these facilities are, how we operate, what something, you know, the features of a cemetery would look like. Obviously, each site is specific to how that would be laid out. With the offer of a site from Fillmore County, we wanted to somehow be able to acknowledge the nature that this site was a very valuable, large piece of property. So we made a determination in August or last summer to move forward with a site analysis, which we funded from the cemetery budget in Little Falls. And we have a consultant on board. We have an executed contract for design of two new state veteran cemeteries. So we use that consultant to visit Fillmore County and the site, and we've done a preliminary cultural resource review. We've done a preliminary soil development summary, and the consultant's even gone so far as to provide a preliminary concept for that property. So with these documents that we've moved ahead in developing through the existing budget at the State Veterans Cemetery, we've expended about $10,000 doing this study. And at this time, the studies have shown no significant red flags to the property. It's a property that we feel has strong potential for a cemetery. The problem is that we have not been able to certify to the federal government that we have the design dollars encumbered to move this project forward and compete on their priority list. Changing the appropriation that was in 2009 would provide a vehicle for us to certify that those funds were available. My concern is inserting southeast Minnesota or Fillmore County into that appropriation without having a mechanism in place to return that money into an account that could be used then to design the additional cemeteries that one of these three regions is going to get left out, that the money is not going to be available. We've encumbered over $1 million of the $1.5 million in that 2009 appropriation for executing the design contract for two state veteran cemeteries. Now, you know, adding an additional region or county will allow us to amend that design contract, but if there's no mechanism put in place there to return that money and use for a third one, one of these areas is going to get left out in areas that we've done a fair amount of work in searching for sites already. We wouldn't be asking for additional money, just a way that return from the federal government could be used for the third cemetery. You know, we feel that there's a pretty simple way to accomplish creating and building new cemeteries in any of these regions that would desire them.
Thank you, Mr. Swantek. Any questions for the testifier? Representative Anzel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the testifier, I would be more concerned about the fact that it's taken, by your own admission, 3 years to site a cemetery in the Northeast. Seems to me Representative Davids has watched that process and has concluded, well, before we end up with another 3 years and no cemetery in the Northeast, no cemetery in Southeast, no cemetery in Southwest, perhaps this is a way to get us off center and get us moving in at least one of the three areas. As far as the federal reimbursement is concerned, I need to know a little more about that. And I'm struck by your insistence that if we don't do this correctly, there won't be enough federal money for reimbursement to do all three, and we'll only end up with two. But it just seems to me that two is better than zero.
Mr. Swantek?
Mr.
Could you help me out a little bit? Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, understand. We don't have, of the projects that we've been working on, they're all competing with the federal government for funding, except for we have applied, we have submitted a pre-application grant for a cemetery in Southeast Minnesota. That is currently competing on the priority list for construction projects for state cemeteries. We have not been able to certify that we have design funds available. We're not at risk of losing that money as it comes back. What my concern is the way the appropriation is written is that once that reimbursement comes back, it's scheduled to go to the veterans' homes for asset preservation. I'm just asking the potential for that money to stay in an account where we could use it to design a third cemetery before it goes to the veterans' homes for asset preservation. I think it's a simple mechanism to allow us to get the cemeteries that everybody in these regions wants. We're prepared to move forward with a cemetery in any of these locations once we find a suitable site. Fillmore County is the most positive site that we've looked at out of over 30 sites. We're not opposed to the site in Fillmore County. My concern is that once we do more than this preliminary investigation, if we find a problem with the site in Fillmore County, all of a sudden we've boxed ourselves into only looking for additional sites in Fillmore County when it's the region of Southeast Minnesota that we want to serve. That's my concern.
Representative Coonan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Swantek, the group in Redwood County has been working on a site for several years now, and I talked to them last week, and they seem to have a site. I understand they have a site located southeast of Redwood Falls. Now, is this just the beginning idea of theirs, or is this a site that you've actually had a chance to look at? If you could kind of give me an update on that.
Mr. Swantek.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Coonan, southwest Minnesota Redwood area. I have been in contact, you know, with the limited resources. Again, I'm the director of the State Cemetery in Little Falls, and my number one task is to make sure that that facility continues to operate in a positive fashion. With the limited resources for these projects, we've really reacted to sites that have been brought forward. Fillmore County, for example, we've been working closely with the county commissioner in St. Louis County, interested local government officials in northeast Minnesota, Carlton County. So we react to these sites when they're brought forward, and we go out and do a visual inspection. If it looks like they have promise, then we'll take them to our consultant, and we've set up an arrangement with them kind of on a flat fee basis that they'll do some of this preliminary work for us to take a little bit more of a technical look at the site. I have had recent conversations with folks in Redwood County. They mentioned a couple sites that they had previously thought of, but for whatever reason had stopped considering them. I told them it's helpful to have somebody local that can bring these sites forward. We will promptly react to them and take a look at them. That's what's creating a positive site in Fillmore County. It's what's given us the opportunity to look at 29 sites in northeast Minnesota. I'm not from these areas. I don't know where these potential properties are. So when these individuals that are from those areas come forward, it's very helpful. And we don't want to give an impression that any of these areas are being wiped off of for consideration, because there's veterans in all of these areas that deserve to have close local access to this benefit, which many times is the only benefit a veteran ever takes advantage of. We find that on a regular basis, that the burial at a veteran cemetery is the only benefit that they've ever asked for in return for their military service. And giving that to veterans in other regions of our state, not just the metro area with Fort Snelling and central Minnesota with Little Falls, I think is a very honorable task that we all, as residents of the state of Minnesota, can take on.
Representative, do you have a follow-up?
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Swantek.
Thank you. Representative Davis.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Several items here. First of all, if you look on the amendment that has been put on the bill, line 2.5, it says commissioner shall give priority consideration. That doesn't mean that if there's a better one someplace, that that's not going to be picked. So it's not an issue of it has to be Fillmore County no matter what. Now, of course, that'd be my preference, but that's not what the language says. That's point number one. Point number two, Fillmore County has stepped up to the plate and has said they would donate X number of acres, over 100 and some acres, out of the county farm, a beautiful location, for the Veterans Cemetery. And I'm not aware of any, maybe Mr. Swantek could help me out here, but I'm not aware of any other area or county in southeastern Minnesota that's willing to give the land for the cemetery or for the site.
Mr. Swanton?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Davids, Fillmore County is the only area in Spring Valley. I've looked at that site as well. That is the only potential property that's come forward. I would say, though, that, you know, southeast Minnesota has not been a strong focus for a project because we haven't had money to be able to fully pursue a new cemetery down in those regions. The contract that we've executed with our consultant specifically identifies northeast Minnesota and Redwood County, and so with that being where the money was, that's been the focus of our efforts. You are correct, though, Representative, that Fillmore County, and again, it's a, by all indications, there's nothing yet that's shown that this site presents any significant challenges.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Hopefully this bill will move forward, and if it does, I'd be working on language, not today necessarily, but it says land donation from the county of Fillmore. There's another site that, if that didn't work, and you toured, Mr. Swantek toured the site in Spring Valley, where I believe the city would be willing to give 100 acres for a veterans cemetery. And so we'd have to, because this just says donation from the county, so we might have to work on that just a little bit. But a couple other things. First of all, for the record, I believe this bill was, these bills were brought forward for southeastern Minnesota from former Representative Welty and myself in, I think it was the 2009 bonding bill. I believe it's where we did that. Maybe if Mr. Cleary could clarify that.
Mr. Cleary, do you have recollection on that?
Yes, I believe in, Chairman and members, Representative Davids, I believe in 2009 bonding bill, Redwood County and northeastern Minnesota were mentioned and authorized. And then last year in the policy bill, southeastern Minnesota was authorized, and the Redwood County was broadened to southwestern Minnesota. So that was the first time just a year ago, even less, 6 months ago, that all three areas were authorized. Does that help?
Well, Mr. Davids? And Mr. Chairman, maybe another question for Mr. Cleary. As far as the language to release some of the funds from this money, for some reason, southwest Minnesota, northeast Minnesota money was released, but not southeast Minnesota. Can you explain why that happened?
Mr. Cleary.
I believe, Mr. Chairman and Representative Davids, I believe it was just that there was not a strong push from southeast at that time. There was a strong push from Redwood County, and that got added to the northeastern Minnesota, where there was a really strong push for it.
Representative Davids.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee. It's not my intention at all to, when it comes to the state cemetery siting, to diminish northeastern Minnesota or Redwood County or southwestern Minnesota in any way. This would be in addition to. So if this bill moves forward, I'd like to work with Mr. Swantek and Mr. Cleary and others to see what we could do to address his concern of not having the money come back into the cemetery fund. And so I don't know if you have, maybe if Mr. Swantek, I'd have a question if he has some idea of how we could fix that to address his concern, because like I said, it's not my intention at all to diminish northeastern or southwestern, but to include southeastern Minnesota that's ready to go on this. And so if Mr. Swantek could give me an idea of a fix.
Mr. Swantek.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Davids, we have submitted some recommended language for putting that mechanism in place. We feel it's fairly simple in nature, that there's no additional money required. Again, it just, when that money comes back from the federal government, we'll be able to use it for the additional areas. We don't have the resources, nor is the federal government interested in funding the construction of multiple cemeteries at one time. It's going to take some time and effort to get these facilities up and going. Representative Lemire could address the fact that Little Falls hasn't happened overnight. It's been a lengthy process to get that cemetery to where it's at today and the success that we've had there today.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess this would be a question for Mr. Cleary. Do you have language off the top of your head that could take care of Mr. Swantek's concern now, or is this something the bill should be laid over or fixed in bonding? I'd rather fix it here, but...
Mr. Cleary.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Davids, yes, it would be good to fix it here. If you would hold this bill while hearing the other bill, I think I could rustle it up that quickly.
Okay. Is that okay with you?
Mr. Chairman, if we could temporarily lay the bill over so Mr. Cleary can rustle up some language that makes Mr. Swantek...
Okay. House File 226, as amended on the DE4 amendment, will be temporarily laid over and brought back, and we'll have Representative Detmer come forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members.
Representative Detmer, if you could come forward and present your bill, and I know we've got quite a few testifiers, members. We have... also, two overviews from two different groups to come. So hopefully the testifiers that come and testify on this bill, that we won't take too much time, and hopefully there's not too much controversy about the House file. Representative Detmer, welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself at the table.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Representative Bob Detmer and committee members, and I'd like to move House File 384.
Representative Detmer.
And I assume that they would be going to the State Government Finance Committee.
Correct, if you could make that motion.
I made that motion, yes.
Okay, go ahead. Please proceed.
Well, Mr. Chair and committee members, the bill, basically what the bill is doing is repealing the sunset date of the Campus Veterans Representative Program. And the program is set to expire no later than June 30th, 2012. Although the sunset date is more than a year away, speaking to the campus offices, they're going to have to start shutting that down beginning this year. The bill, in terms of fiscal data, the bill does not appropriate funds. However, in order for the program to continue, The Department of Veterans Affairs would need to a base appropriation of $1.5 million for the next fiscal year. The Higher Education Veterans Assistance Program provides assistance to veterans at both public and private Minnesota colleges and universities through a central liaison staff and campus veterans assistant officers. And these people are specially trained, specifically trained for the VA and also the GI Bill benefits to assist students and veterans in order to better attain and utilize them on campus. A little background, the program serves over 7,000 Minnesota veterans who use the federal GI Bill and educational benefits in our Minnesota institutions of higher education. The MDVA higher education representatives often become one of the only actual physical faces that on campus that these veterans can speak to regarding their benefits. And the sunset date was extended 1 year to June 2012, but the funding has not been appropriate for the remainder of the program. And I'll cut my comments short because I know we have several people that would like to testify.
Thank you, Representative Debner. Members, do you have any questions for Representative Detmer at this time before I bring our testifiers up? Okay, if testifiers could come up and sign in with the one of the pages. There's a sign-in sheet that the individuals can sign in. If they could do that preliminary before we come to testify, that would be great. Just to give us a short concern why you're supporting this bill or you're concerned about the bill. If you could identify yourself with the tape and please proceed.
Yes, Mr. Chairman and committee members, my name is Don Pfeffer. I am the statewide director of the Higher Education Veterans Program and have been since its inception in July of 2006. I want to thank you, the legislature, for the past support that we've received. This is a program that grew out of a vision of how we could better serve initially the 3,000 Minnesota Guard members who were returning home in 2007. We have much expanded beyond that. Just to give some more current information, in 2006, we had roughly 5,000 individuals in Minnesota certified for VA education benefits. As of this past December, we are now at 12,285 individuals certified for VA benefits. You can see that's close to a threefold increase in the number of people using and having the benefits of the federal VA programs. When we started, one of our goals was to create veteran centers. There were three centers that existed in 2006. Some were pretty well full service, and some were just kind of in name only. But as of 2010, in December 2010, we now have 62 centers that we created on both public and private college and university campuses in Minnesota. New persons served annually. We started the first year, we started slow. We had a little bit over 1,000 individuals, single individuals. We are now at almost 7,000 individuals, new individuals every year that join us. That's not counting our return visitors. That's only the brand new people that come into our system through the centers. And what's happened is that we've had a 31% increase this past year in the number of visits from all the people that visit our centers. We have roughly 58,000 contacts with those individuals over the course of an academic year. And as you can see, there's quite a lineup of people behind me, so that I'll move on a little bit faster. But basically, we also created an electronic site that brings worldwide information to Minnesota veterans serving all over the world and also across the United States, as well as in Minnesota. So we have made an impact internationally with our soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines, and their family members that are scattered all over the world. And one of the most significant figures is that when we started, there were roughly about a little better than $50 million coming into Minnesota through military and government VA programs for education benefits. and now we're close to $100 million. We're at almost $97 million coming into Minnesota. With that, I think I'll step aside unless you have some specific questions for me, and ask that if we could, our visitors, other visitors could speak. These are the students that have been impacted.
Thank you, Mr. Pfeffer. Appreciate your testimony, and we'll, if there are questions, we'll probably bring you back up again. Thank you. If Mr. Detberner, Vice President, could come forward. Please identify yourself for the tape.
Chair Anderson, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to testify. My name is Jeff Ditburner. I'm the Vice President of the Minnesota State College Student Association. Our association represents Minnesota's public two-year community and technical colleges. With me today is Bill Johnson, a student at Hennepin Technical College and a Vietnam War veteran. First, I want to thank Representative Detmer for his work on his bill. When our students heard that the Higher Education's Veterans Assistance Program would expire at the end of fiscal year 2012, they became very concerned. Even though only a fraction of our students are veterans, we all share a deep appreciation for the sacrifices our veterans have made. It was once said that our veterans jump in line to serve our country, and they shouldn't have to wait in line to further their education. It's with that spirit that our students have directed us to support the extension of this very important program. This program serves a lot of students for a very low price. For the cost of about $1 million a year, this program provides 13 regional representatives and serves 62 public colleges and universities throughout Minnesota. The campus representatives help staff these campus veteran centers, and they provide much-needed assistance for veterans in processing their GI Bill, VA benefits, and financial aid. Moreover, they help returning veterans with reintegration into civilian life. They provide a community where veterans can share their experiences with their fellow brothers and sisters in arms. And they're also able to refer veterans who are experiencing mental health or other problems to the appropriate social service agencies. Our veterans didn't give up on our country, and we can't give up on them. Every veteran should have the opportunity to transition into a successful civilian life, and this program makes that possible. Nobody knows the struggles of a veteran like a veteran, and that's why this program works. The campus representatives are employees of the Department of Veteran Affairs, and they're not employees of the college. They know the complex system of veterans' benefits, and they can offer students help with these issues that our regular college employees can't. Like I said, no one knows the struggles of a veteran like a veteran, and with me today is Bill Johnson. He's a Vietnam vet, and again, he's a student at Hennepin Technical College, and he'd like to share with you how this program is important to him.
Thank you, Mr. Ditburner. Mr. Johnson, would you identify yourself for the tape?
Yes. First of all, can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Okay, good, because I have a tendency to speak softly. So, Jeff Ditburner said,
please identify yourself for the tape.
My name is Bill Johnson. I am a president of the Veteran Student Association for Brooklyn Park campus of Hennepin Technical College. I also work in the Veterans Resource Center. I'm here today to talk about the necessity of keeping our regional coordinators, who are instrumental in helping our younger veterans understand the various options they have using their educational benefits, that they are entitled under the various chapters of the GI Bill. They serve as our experts, our teachers, and our advocates. The Veterans Administration's regulations are often difficult to understand, with some offering no real explanation on how GI Bill claims are processed. I have spent a year myself trying to get an explanation on how basic allowance for housing works, with little no success. Ray Bone, our regional coordinator, was able to get some information so students who take non-standard terms can take courses, can receive their allowance. Now, what I mean by non-standard courses is that we call short block courses in MSCU, 3 weeks at a time, but you're going every day for 5-6 hours, okay? He has also helped numerous times when students have eligible for benefits under both the Montgomery and the post 9/11 GI bills to understand the benefits under both so they can maximize their total benefit that they are to receive. As a student worker, Ray trains us to give advice to our prospective students will be enrolling under the GI Bill. He helps us understand what benefits the various chapters offer and who qualifies for those benefits. This is a task that has to be repeated each year, since we all eventually will graduate. He also works with our financial aid people to keep them up to date with changes in the regulations. As veterans, we also feel the most important role of our regional coordinators play is that of advocate. As representatives for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, they are able to exercise influence with both the Veterans Administration and the colleges they serve. I have witnessed many times the work of our regional coordinator, Ray Bone, as he has helped veterans with who have had problems with their benefits. I know of one instance where there was a veteran who was who had not received his basic allowance for housing for 3 months, and was about to have himself and his family with two small children evicted from their apartment. Ray was able to contact people in the American Legion who obtained temporary financial aid for the family, while at the same time he was able to work with the VA to get the matter straightened up. He also has helped schools comply with state regulations dealing with delayed payments from the GI Bill. On a more pragmatic basis, having 13 regional coordinators serving over 50 colleges, rather than having a person at each of the colleges performing the same function, makes for a more efficient use of our taxpayer dollars. In conclusion, some of you may ask, why is an old veteran like myself arguing for this, since my day has passed to receive any benefits from the GI Bill? The answer is simple. Because of the GI Bill, I was able to make a better life for myself and my family. It was my opportunity to fulfill the American dream. This is something I want to give our younger veterans. God bless you. God bless the state of Minnesota. God bless America.
Thank you, Mr. Jansen. Thank you, Mr. Ditburner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Would Lori Brook please come forward? Welcome to the committee, and for the record, if you could identify yourself, that'd be great.
Hey, good morning, Mr. Chairman, or afternoon, excuse me, members. My name is Todd Kabinski. I am the Vice President of the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers. I send greetings from our President, Pete Burscheid. He was unable to attend today. And I just wanted to voice our support with continuing this program. The campus reps are an integral part of what we do with the overall taking care of our veterans. We can't possibly know the intricacies of every single program out there, and we rely heavily on the campus reps to help us with the education piece. At this time, I would like to introduce Lori Brook. She is a Becker County Veteran Service Officer and the Association President.
Ms. Brook.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. I am Lori Brook, the Becker County Veteran Service Officer. The single largest referral I make out of my office every day is to the Higher Education Coordinator. It's the number one phone call. The next would be to the VA. This also tracks along with what the Chancellor's Research and Planning Office says, that there's an 89% increase in the students in the Minnesota State Technical Colleges, which in Becker County we have the Detroit Lakes. That also tracks with the volume that I see in my office. The coordinators are embedded in the schools. It allows the veterans a place to go for questions, answers, and any issues that they have. It is also a place that is another eye and ear for myself. Anytime that there is an education question, the first place that they go is to that resource center. If there is something other than education, their next phone call from that coordinator is to the CVSO. It provides a wraparound service for every veteran. There are some veterans that only go to college and don't come in and see their CVSO. This allows us that opportunity to provide them not only their educational benefits, but all the other benefits that they have available to them. The campus representatives do an amazing job. I have to tell you that if you just took a look at all of the GI bills, the Montgomery GI bills, and the combinations, that you could have, it's enough to make my head swim. Even when they put it in black and white for me to answer a question to the veteran, I can't do it. They changed so fast with the post 9/11 GI Bill and the enhancement that just came up in 2011. Without the campus representative, it would take me hours to research the correct answer for a student that is a veteran. I have my hands full getting their other benefits, and allowing us to have that resource is invaluable to the student veterans.
Thank you, Ms. Brooke. Thank you, Mr. Kobinski. Any questions for the testifier? If not, thank you for being here. The next person, Joseph Butler.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Joseph Butler. I am the president of the MSUM Veterans Club. I am a state-funded student worker at the Veterans Resource Center for the regional coordinators. I am a veteran from the 22-month deployment to Iraq, 34th Infantry deployed. My experience with the regional coordinator is much like many of the other veterans that went through. The coordinators act as a very useful liaison for the veterans to utilize all the benefits that are available to them. As Lori Brooke stated earlier, there are so many different versions, and each veteran actually kind of has their own benefit, especially with the Chapter 33, at what they're entitled to. Also, without the liaison, we wouldn't have, when I started at MSUM, we had a small corner office, no veterans programs on campus, nothing was available. With the help of the veterans, the higher education veterans coordinator, we were able to start the veterans club, get us a space with a study space and computers for the veterans to use, and we were able to act as a centralized location for the veterans to get their benefits, talk with admissions, work with their CVSOs. In my personal experience, it's that position is an invaluable tool. Losing that tool would cause veterans to not attend college as much, therefore reducing income into the schools and into the state. These schools produce valuable working members of society, and it all has to start at one place. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Butler. Any questions for the testifier? Thank you again for coming forward. Mr. Jansen, Jason? For the record, if you could identify yourself, that'd be great.
My name is Jason Johnson, and I'm a student at Dakota County Technical College. I'm a disabled veteran, and I use the regional coordinator at my school quite frequently. I'm dealing with a traumatic brain injury, and I go in there every week, and she explains all the benefits that change. I'm currently in Chapter 33, and that one's always changing, so she's constantly informing me on new changes. She gave me info on Chapter 31, which is vocational rehabilitation, because of my head injury. She does let me know about everything that's out there, also not just those two, but every single benefit for education that is possible, not just one or the other. She knows her info, and if she doesn't, she lets me know within the same day. She gets back to me within the same day. And I haven't, without her, I wouldn't be in college right now.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Johnson? Thank you for coming forward.
Thank you.
Jessica Jackson?
Yes.
welcome to the committee, Ms. Jackson. If you please identify yourself for the tape, that would be great. Please speak into the microphone, too. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. My name is Jessica Jackson. I'm the Dakota County student worker in the Resource Center, the Veterans Resource Center. And my experience with the higher education program has been phenomenal. I moved to the state from South Carolina, and getting out of the military, I didn't have a lot of resources that was made known to me. The Army has a program called ACAP, which offers assistance to soldiers once they decide to get out of the military. This time frame for ACAP is supposed to be a year long. My process probably lasted about 3 months. So the information that I received was kind of rushed information, and I didn't receive all of the knowledge of knowing about all of the benefits and all of the programs that were available to me. So when I got to South Carolina, my intentions were to go to school full time. But because I didn't have a liaison there, a regional coordinator, I didn't know what I had, my benefits. I didn't know my benefits. So applying for school was very difficult, and I ended up not going. Shortly after, a couple years later, we moved, my family and I moved here from Minnesota. Well, we moved to Minnesota, and we live with my mother and father-in-law, who are also veterans. Once we got here, my husband and I, who is a veteran as well, we decided that if we couldn't find work, which was kind of difficult at the time, that we would apply for school. Dakota County Tech was the closest school to our city that we're from, so we applied. Applying was at first a little nerve-wracking because we kind of got the runaround. We went to the certifying official at the school. He just told us about information that we needed to fill out online. We went online and filled out that information, but because we had other questions, the certifying official is not a veteran. He could not answer all of our questions. So we were then referred to our regional coordinator. And once we got to our regional coordinator, not only did we find out about benefits for school, but we found out about other benefits as far as family assistance, and we were referred to county veteran services and family assistance centers in the area. I think this program is imperative that we have it, because it offers not only the veterans an opportunity to go to school, but it also gives us other avenues, and it also gives us more resources. It allows the regional coordinator to give us it allows the regional coordinator to branch out and allow us to know what else, what other benefits that we have. Like I said, at the particular time when I got to school, I didn't know Minnesota. I didn't know my benefits. So my regional coordinator gave me information about child care, and also gave my husband some information about finding jobs and reprocessing paperwork from the military. And I think without the regional coordinator there, it would have been a lot more difficult for us to enter in school and find out about these other benefits. We had some issues a month ago with our pay, and I brought those issues up to my certifying official at school, who could not give me an answer to what was going on. So we contacted the regional coordinator in our school, who made some contacts and found out about hardship program or hardship reimbursement. So I think that was very helpful in that sense. And if we didn't have that regional coordinator there, then we wouldn't know about all of the other areas that we can apply for, benefits or pay that we can get. Having this regional coordinator in each school gives us a voice. It offers us a language. It helps us to speak the language to the school so they can help better serve us. as veterans. They act as counselors. And I think, again, without this regional coordinator at the schools, then like the veterans before me, we probably wouldn't be in school.
Thank you, Ms. Jackson. I appreciate that. Members, we have just a short amount of time. I've got one more person on a testifier list here, and I appreciate you being here. And Ms. Muehlmans, Director of Student Life, Nicole, she could come forward. And if you could shorten up your testimony, I appreciate you being here, but we've got some other things that we have to get done today, too, so thank you.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Nicole Muehlmans. I'm the Director of Student Life at Dakota County Technical College, and I also oversee a lot of the veterans operations that we have on our campus. I see every day how important this program is to our students. It's a hard system to navigate higher education, and with the struggles that veterans may already have and the experiences that they have, it's just completely clear that we need the support on our campuses to help with the issues they face, not only with their benefits, but other situations. Some of the things that our regional coordinator in this program have helped our campus with is become a yellow ribbon campus, which allows us to reach out into our community and do events and do free car care clinics and things like that that can assist not only our campus but our community. They obviously work with students and assist with benefits, but we also have facilitated some training for our campus on PTSD and some other issues facing veterans that maybe faculty members haven't thought of before. And this program is just essential in, you know, helping the students, but also putting on other programs for education for our staff and faculty as well.
Thank you, Ms. Muehlmans. Appreciate you being here. Other testifiers that would like to testify, if we could keep it short, that'd be great. Please come forward. Please identify yourself for the tape.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, committee. My name is Nathan D. Pike. I am the Fillmore County Veterans Service Officer, and I am also in receipt of the benefits from this valuable program. I'll keep this short. Our wars are winding down. We're going to have an influx of veterans coming back to this great state. Let's not get rid of this program just yet. And like Secretary Lori up there has mentioned, her biggest referral is to the college campus reps. That is mine as well from my younger veterans. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Board, for your time.
Thank you. If the next testifier could come forward, please.
Good afternoon. I'm Kimberly Burke-Wooster. I'm the president of the University of Minnesota Student Veterans Association, 8.5-year veteran of the United States Navy. I just came here to speak about Mr. Bauer, who is our regional services coordinator and our representative to the HEVP program. I would like to say that without him, I probably would have dropped out of school at this point for lack of time to answer all the email questions that I receive from our student veterans about pay, benefits, problems that they're having. Without Dwayne to refer them to, I honestly would not have the time to perform the function that I do, go to school, be a mother, and be a wife. Thank you very much.
Thank you for testifying.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Andrew Spaeth. I'm the state chair of the Minnesota State University Student Association. We represent the over 75,000 students that attend the state universities in Bemidji, Winona, Moorhead, St. Cloud, Southwest State, and Marshall Metropolitan here in St. Paul and Mankato. Our students are very concerned about the loss of the Veterans Higher Education Assistance Program that would sunset at the end of the fiscal year. I just want to reiterate that something that was brought up by the first testifier, according to a 2009 Veterans Services Annual Report on Utilization of Veterans Resource Centers, they noted that the regional representatives funded by this program made roughly 58,000 contacts with student veterans. This was a 44.7% increase from 2008, and over 5,100 of these contacts were with first-time student veteran users. I just want to thank you, Mr. Chairman, and committee members for the opportunity to share that with you.
Thank you, Mr. Spaeth. Any comments or questions, Representative Anzell?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the author and to the excellent testimony by your presenters. you know me well enough to know that this is something that, of course, I'm going to support, and something that I would work with you throughout the remaining months of the session to figure out a creative way of preventing this sunset. I can't imagine why there was a sunset written into the original appropriation. I agree with the testifier about as our involvement in these conflicts around the world winds down, the pressure on these services and on our public institutions of higher education are going to increase. We shouldn't be allowing this to sunset. But I'll conclude, Representative Detmer, by saying, you know, I'm one of the few around here who's not afraid to use the word that starts with a T. And I'm one of the few around here that's not bashful about saying there are consequences when we starve programs and institutions that serve people who we all believe need services. So as we go forward, I'd really be happy to work with you and Chair Davids and others to deal with raising the revenue to continue this very, very worthwhile and necessary program.
Representative Detmer?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. You know, one thing that wasn't pointed out, that the institutions that have these centers, they donate the room for these people to work in, and it's that's something that we need to bring up too. That I had the opportunity to speak at the opening of the center at Century College. They invited me to come in and speak when they opened and dedicated the center, and just incredible the number of veterans that showed up, not only students but veterans from the community. And it's a great program, and we know how much money is coming into the state with federal dollars, with all the benefits. So we hope that as this bill goes forward, we can find a way to keep this program intact. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any other questions for the testifier?
And I renew my motion to pass this from this committee to the State Government and Finance Committee.
Representative Detmer renews his motion to move House File 384 and send it on to State Government Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. Motion carried. You're on your way. We had a little mix-up in time here, and so I'm going to ask the people from the Defending the Blue Line organization to come down and give their testimony. They had taken time off from work. They thought they were going to be first on the agenda, and we didn't realize that their time commitment was so much smaller. So, Mr. Larson, if you could come forward along with your people to testify on defending the Blue Line, I appreciate it.
Chair, if I could have a page, I've got some handouts here. Do I have a page? Thank you. Mr. Chair and members, Dan Larson, today representing the Defending the Blue Line Club. I'm an advisory board member to Defending the Blue Line, a group that helps military hockey families keep their kids in the game through the additional stresses of ongoing deployments. For ongoing training and deployments. So this is a volunteer organization, and one that I'm proud and honored to be here today to represent and introduce to you. So we've got Shane Hudella, who is the founder. He's a master sergeant in the Army National Guard, the founder of Defending the Blue Line, and also its president is here to tell you a little bit about what the group does. And then we have with us Tech Sergeants John and Heather Viagas, and their son, Christian, who today is the star of the show. He's a Farmington hockey player and a star in that system. So Thank you very much for the opportunity. Mr. Chair, as you know, I'm working to help raise the profile of this good and worthy organization. And last week or a week or so ago, Mr. Chairman, you were very helpful in coming over to the Rotunda, where we had Defending the Blue Line Day, and the governor came with a proclamation, and many of you showed up for pictures with the group. So this is to say thank you for this opportunity and to let you know that each year we're looking to build friends of Defending the Blue Line, and each and every one of you has received an email that if you want to be listed as a friend of Defending the Blue Line, all you have to do is respond to us, and that gets you on our list. It gets you on our website list, but it also keeps you tuned into developments with the group and the organization and keeps you tuned into the program. So again, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Shane Hudella, president of Defending the Blue Line.
Thank you, Mr. Larson. Shane, if you could identify yourself for the tape, that would be fantastic.
Sure, Mr. Chairman, Representatives Shane Hudella, president and founder of Defending the Blue Line. Appreciate your time today. We'll keep it very brief. Definitely wanted to give thanks for having us here. Just a quick overview of what we do. We have four main programs that we do for our military service members. And when I say service members, it encompasses veterans, folks that are currently deployed or currently serving. We provide hockey equipment so that their kids can start out or continue on in hockey at no cost. We provide free summer hockey camps. Last year, we sent about 300 kids to a wide variety of different camps across Minnesota and western Wisconsin. We provide a small amount of grants to help with association fees. And then lastly, we send families of four down to see an NHL game for free. So one thing that I always tell people, a lot of people don't understand, a lot of reservists in Minnesota, whether it's in the National Guard or whether it's in a reserve component of one of the active branches, a lot of those families have been affected by the economy like everybody else. Typical cost to put a kid through hockey is about $500 for their equipment, $500 or more for association fees, and there's other costs involved. So for the average kid to go through a program, you're probably looking at $1,500 to $2,000. That's a lot of money to a low-ranking service member, and that's where we've stepped in with our organization and a number of our partners to be able to help with those costs. Because for a fair amount of the families, it has made a difference of whether or not their child has started or continued on in hockey while their parents have been deployed or at training.
Are there any questions for Mr. Hudella or Mr. Larson? Representative Anzell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you have a charitable gambling license?
We do not, sir.
Representative Kahn.
Is the program open to anyone, or are there income level requirements for to benefit from it?
Mr. Hudella.
There's not an income level requirement for it, but we do prioritize by rank. So if we had 10 sets of equipment to hand out, just as an example, we would hand those out to the lowest ranking people before the higher ranking people.
Is that military? Are there any income questions asked then?
No, ma'am.
Why not? Unless you don't have enough money to fund everybody.
Mr. Hudella.
Well, I guess it's answered in a way by that prioritization. We have two tiers, those that are in the top tier, which is families of KAA, combat wounded, and currently deployed. The second tier is currently serving in veterans. Now, within those groups, we prioritize it by rank. So a lower-ranking service member, a private or a junior airman that we know because of our military experience makes less money than, say, a captain, an officer within that same service. We have that knowledge ahead of time of that financial background of that service member.
Representative Kahn?
Well, that assumes that that's their only income. But there are people who might have other income who then are veterans or...
Sure,
Mr. Hudella.
So I just, if it's a charitable organization, I don't understand the problem of asking for income unless you had enough to fund everyone who asked for it.
Representative Kahn?
Well, that's, I mean, the question is, if you don't have enough, why aren't you looking at putting income requirements in place?
Mr. Hudella.
Sure, I understand the question. We'll look at that for the future. We've been very lucky in our first year in that we have been able to fulfill all the benefits for equipment and games and so on, but definitely noted for the future for us.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, we're a brand new organization. This just hasn't come up yet, so we're still working through a lot of kinks. If this is one that we've just discovered, then we might work on it as well. So we're brand new. Thank you for the question.
Well, thank you for your testimony. If we could bring those other testifiers up to testify, I'm guessing, Mr. Larson, they wanted to address the issue.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I could have John and Heather Viagas and their son Christian.
If you could address, identify yourself for the tape, that would be fantastic.
Yes, sir. My name's Tech Sergeant John Viegas. This is my wife, Heather, and my son, Christian. We received some of the equipment and from Defending the Blue Line for my son, Christian, to play hockey in Farmington. And he also attended a camp in Spooner, Wisconsin, with some former Division I college hockey players, and a clinic through Minnesota Made, which, if any of you guys know Minnesota Made, they produce quite a number of superstars. It's been a great organization for us. We've gone to a couple wild games, and more importantly, the camp, I think, brought together all military children. Whether you were your mom or dad was deployed or not deployed, I think it was important to be around other kids so you guys, you're sharing the same experience, and they were able to come together and take their minds off the fact that if their mom or dad was deployed. I think that's a hidden benefit of Defending the Blue Line with the summer camps, which is pretty important. Other than that, I mean, it's been a great organization, and, he plays for Farmington. Cottage Grove has really taken it to us this year. There's tough teams there. But it's helped out a lot of families. We've recommended a couple military families for the program. A retired gentleman from the Air Force, he benefited from it as well, and it's just been great. So.
Well, thank you for Mr. Viagas and you. Your wife and the son. Any questions for the Viagas family? Well, thanks again, and thank you for the presentation. We'll look forward to hearing more about the Defending the Blue Line, and look forward to hearing the rivalries between Cottage Grove and all these other places. So, thanks again for being here, and appreciate your testimony. Representative Davids, can we get your bill up and out real quick?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I would once again move House File 226 as amended. Mr. Chairman, then I have another amendment I'd like to present very briefly. It's so the amendment H0226A2, which I believe is being passed out right now.
That and is to amend the DE4 amendment? Is
actually, I believe that it's to amend the DE4 amendment, and then we'd act on that.
Right.
Okay. So, yes, I will move to the H0226A2 amendment to amend the H0226DE4 amendment.
Representative Davis, if you could just give us a brief thing, okay, background on what that is all about.
To take care of Mr. Swantek's concerns and others, what we're doing is on page 1, right in the middle of line 15 there, after the period and before federal reimbursement, we'd insert the following language. And then, of course, then it would go, you'd change the, on line 1.15, the F in federal to a small F. And what that does is basically what it's saying is that that there'd be basically three cemeteries that would be eligible. And then when that money came back, the last money's coming back, then would go to the Veterans Home statewide for asset preservation. So we're adding another cemetery so that three could be funded, and one of the money comes back from the federal government, it would go to the Veterans Homes statewide. So we certainly don't want to take from Veterans Homes. And so that, I believe, Mr. Swantek is and Mr. Cleary worked on this, and it seems to meet their needs.
Okay, members, any questions for the testifier on this new amendment to the DE4 amendment?
I don't.
Representative Kahn.
Okay, I don't follow the grammar of it. So it's after the period, final. Okay, so the capital F is then made a small f.
Yes.
And then and then that sentence goes in.
So, Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn, everything goes right after the period and before the F, and we change the capital F to a small f. Okay. So everything's put right in there.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Kahn, that's very astute of you to catch the grammar issue there. There's a little mistake involving the period, but if you read it through, Representative Davids is correct about that. The reviser will take care of that one little mistake regarding the period.
Representative Kahn?
If you don't believe that they should go out of here perfectly?
Representative Kahn?
Just a rhetorical question.
Further questions?
And Mr. Chairman, that the grammatical issue there, we could take care of in bonding, because we would be moving this to bonding, because as Representative Kahn does, I too believe in perfection.
Further questions for Representative Davids on the DE, I should say on the A, 226A2 amendment. Okay, all those in favor of the A2 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. Motion is carried. We're now on the DE4 amendment as amended.
So
Representative
moved,
Davids.
Chairman.
So moved. Any questions from the committee? Any questions from the audience? Any concerns on the language that's being brought forward regarding the Veterans Cemetery? If not, we'll proceed to look at House File 226, the DE4 amendment as amended, to be passed. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. Motion carried. This bill will then go on to capital investment as it has been passed out of here.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that House File 226 as amended be passed and sent to the Capital Investment Bonding Committee.
So moved. Any other questions?
Is this a division of the state
government finance? Correct.
So it has to go to state. The only
no.
Oh, it doesn't.
No.
Oh, okay.
You can send it on to the onto other committees besides. So.
Okay.
So let's vote on the motion then that Representative Davis just had, the DE4 amendment, House File 226, DE4 as amended. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. Motion carried. Representative Davids, you're on your way.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members.
Thank you. Now we're having a presentation by the department. Minnesota Assistant Council for Veterans. The Executive Director, Ms. Vitalis, if you could identify yourself for the tape and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair and Committee members. Kathleen Vitalis, CEO of Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans. And in lieu of the time, and I know you want to be done by 2 o'clock, you have a blue folder that was given ahead of time that has a lot of information on our organization. I am going to whip through this presentation because I have a couple of testifiers, veterans and a board member that I would like you to hear from. So I certainly will be available to answer questions, but I'm not going to spend a lot of time reading the slides to you nor a lot of the statistics. So as an overview, we are a 501c3 nonprofit. We've been around for 19 years and we're statewide. We have offices in Mankato, in Duluth, in the Twin Cities, and through those offices we have assisted last year over 800 veterans and their families in over 67 counties. So we are truly statewide, and as I always do in preparation for something like this, I cross-reference our veteran list with each of the representatives or senators that are before me in a hearing, and we have assisted veterans in each of your districts of people sitting in this room today. One statistic on how, what's our target, and why MACV? Why is there a MACV? We're able to, as a nonprofit, leverage other funding that only comes to a nonprofit, and I'll show you in a second about the federal funding that we leverage, corporate and foundation funding that we leverage, but our target are the estimated 4,000 homeless or at-risk veterans in Minnesota. Now, that's also prevention work that we do. There are not 4,000 homeless veterans in Minnesota as we speak. The Wilder survey that was just recently completed said on any given night there were a little over 700, however, and that's just on a point in time in one night. So these are the veterans and their families that MACV targets, and we provide services that fill gaps in service. Again, I'm going through this. This is something, too, that we look at, and we have some federal grants that address employment. And 25% of the veterans that recently came back were unemployed or underemployed. These are statistics that we're dealing with. Now, I have to take a step back and also tell you, who are the veterans that MACV helps? We had an 82-year-old veteran that we assisted last week and an 18-year-old veteran that we assisted last week. It is the full gamut of why we are there for our supportive services. But naturally, with the current wars, we are seeing the average age of who we help go down because of all of the younger veterans that are coming back. Another thing I thought for affordable housing is that Minnesotans have experienced the fastest growth in the nation in the number of households spending more than half their income on housing. And you all know the metrics. You don't want to spend more than 30% of your income on your housing. If you are, you're spending too much, and you're in jeopardy of not being able to afford that housing. Our results, I already talked about that. I want to talk to you, though, about leveraging federal dollars. I understand exactly what is before the legislature this year. I understand that we do have a bill in that got dropped in last week. It is asking for an additional $250,000 for MACV. I know that is a fiscal note, but I am here also to show you our justification when we assist these homeless and in crisis veterans. These are federal dollars on this screen. No state dollars were used here. A federal grant that we were able to get. We took 148 formerly homeless veterans in the metro area. That's this particular grant. We now have one of these outstate. And we're able to take them from homelessness to stability of employment within a year, housed and stable. That represented wages of over $3.5 million. It adds up. Another way we look at this is that a lot of the veterans that we see that come to us first, we work very closely with all the county veteran service officers, with the Department of Veterans Affairs outreach teams, and all of the people out there that are trying to address and reach these veterans. But of the ones that come to us first, and particularly this population, they're not receiving their federal earned benefits. So a very, very conservative estimate of the veterans and their families that we helped last year, getting them on their federal earned income benefits is about $2.5 million. That's federal money coming into the state. Who funds MACV? We get a variety of grants. If there's a grant out there that I can leverage, that I can use for veterans and bring money into this state, I do it for our veterans. These are just some of the things. These are federal grants that we are able to get, but the state money, and currently we're in the base for $500,000, and we're last year we got an additional $100,000, one time only, that goes away this June. I always come back, the need far is far more than that funding, and that state piece stabilizes the housing, utility, things like that, while we're using some of these other federal funds. Our metro region, and I do have some of my staff here today, but my regional director for the metro region is here, Jimmy Collier, and here is some of our staff that we have. I have to say, for the record, one of the most passionate staffs there are. Those 800 veterans and their families served throughout this state were served by 11 full-time people. So they're very busy on their outreach, and they really, really are passionate about what they do. One of our programs is Building 47, which is a VA grant and per diem on the VA Medical Center campus for 13 homeless veterans. We also have some structured independent living homes, and I'm going through this quickly, but I'm trying to also show you that we leverage money coming in to help and prevent homelessness, but we also provide some of our own housing. And we have these structured independent living homes, 10 of them now, that are in neighborhoods in South Minneapolis, Richfield, one now in Duluth, and our newest one that's still coming on board was a project that we did with Ramsey County. And so we'll have a home in Maplewood. That is a house that the county rehabbed for us, and it will be seven bedrooms for homeless veterans. So we provide some of our own housing. Up in Duluth, really quick, this is a property 2 years ago that we bought, blighted property in West Duluth, two buildings and the lot in between. That's what it looks like today. We moved our offices in there December 31st, and the other facility is 11 units that will be for disabled and formerly homeless veterans. So we do provide housing as well as do a lot of prevention work and work on homelessness. In Mankato, opened in 2006, some of our first housing with another 11 units for disabled veterans. Very proud of that program. What we assess, what we provide, again, I'm just having this, I'm not reading this to you. We fill those gaps in these areas, which I just said we fill the gaps, and close to 12,000 contacts annually. Now, I said we directly helped with some of our own money, 800 veterans and their families. But we get far more phone calls that come to us where we can connect people that don't know where to go and how to try to get help. The summary, we're statewide. That leverages a lot of federal grants, and it leverages corporate and foundation giving as well. Non-duplicated services, we know, and my staff is very familiar with all of the programs with the Department of Veterans Affairs and also any of the other programs out there. We do not duplicate services. We leverage funding, our case management, and we bridge that gap. And that is the our presentation and put the puzzle piece in for MACV. These are a lot of other services that are out there today. And again, I want to stress, we don't duplicate any of our services. When we did meet, and again, we're in the base appropriation for $500,000. 3 years ago, that was $1 million. And it has gone back down to the $500,000 and the one-time funding that ends this June 30th. We have a current bill in. I believe it directly went to state government and finance. I'm still trying to figure out how all of that works, but I know a couple of you are on that committee as well. And we hope to have a hearing on that bill, and we're working with the Senate to get the bill on that side. So what I would like to do now, Chairman Anderson, when we met with you, you had asked me and Representative Detmer a couple different questions. One, about do we get audited? I have our audit here for you, a couple different copies. Yes, and I would put it up against anything that happens at the state because we get federal money. We get a three-tier audit, and it's done by Larson Allen annually, and we have no significant findings. The second thing you asked me was, do you have a board? You have a board of directors because you're a nonprofit. Why would a board member, what type of people are they? I did put a synopsis in all of your folders of our board members, but I'd now like to ask one of our current board members to come up, Jill Lawrence.
Thank you for coming before the committee. Please identify yourself for the tape.
My name is Jill Lawrence, and I am a current board member. I've been a board member for MACV for 5 years. I've been a volunteer for 10 years. I want to thank you, Chairman, and the board for the committee members for having me here today. I became involved with MACV through the Elks Association. It's a fraternal organization. And through the Elks, I have learned the great need that there is for our veterans, not only our homeless veterans, but veterans that are in lieu of being displaced, either with jobs or their families being displaced as well. I have two thrusts with MACV, one on the funding side as a board member, and the second, I am a Department of Defense employee. I work as a manager for the Airmen and Family Readiness Office at the Air Base, the Air National Guard Base at St. Paul. I bring people in as a resource, has had to have MACV as a resource. They have been invaluable for some of our members. I also work with the other branches of the military, and we've used them as well. So funding is going down all over for our military, and any additional funding that we can get through the state will be very welcomed. And I thank you for listening today.
Thank you, Ms. Lawrence. So any questions for the testifier? You have some other members that you'd like to have testify?
Two others that are on the list.
Okay.
Thank you, Chairman and committee. My name is Elmer Duncan. I believe I saw you guys not too long ago as well on this same issue. I'd like to reiterate how invaluable this group is to us as veterans. I'm a veteran of 10 years in the National Guard, and now I'm actually a VA employee. And through this program, I went from having a rough time coming back from Iraq, seeing loss of a career, house, cars, family, everything, to going through this program and rebuilding a life that in any other condition would have been lost altogether. I probably would have been a street person the rest of my life. This group really is invaluable. The housing they provide to stabilize your life during this process cannot be duplicated by any other group. They provide something that is invaluable in placing you in an area where you can reach every resource that is available to you. Some of these places that they have put together are remarkable. There is no way I could find any other group that would build on the money that they use to provide such golden opportunities. Now I'm able to serve. I'll easily do another 5-10 years working at the VA. As I tell to all my other veterans, I spent 10 years taking people around apart. Now I get to spend 10 years putting them back together. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Duncan.
How do you do, Mr. Chairman and Chairman Wilbur? My name is Robert Thames, and I'm an alumni of MACV. I just left MACV the year of January of 2010, and my time there at VA, at MACV, it was one of the best things I think that happened for me as a veteran. I come by way of MACV looking for employment. Also had some problems with alcohol after my divorce and my marriage. And at that time in my life, being homeless at that time, they tend to be there for me. I probably would have had a better opportunity to go anywhere else at that time in my life. I stayed 2 years there in the program, and I can tell you, it ain't nothing like it out there nowhere. And I'm quite sure the things that I've seen them do in the 2 years that I have been in their tenure, I'm quite sure it's going to be a great need for the guys that's coming home pretty soon. And I would like to hopefully say to you all that maybe you all ought to really consider this here as something that would be valid for the guys that's coming, because they're going to need it. I'm quite sure there's going to be more guys who will be out there homeless, and I'm quite sure that the need is there. The need is definitely there. And since my understanding of what I've been going through, I've got a new apartment since then. I've been gone to my own place for about a year and 3 months now. Got my daughter back with me, you know, and things are looking better. Life is getting good. Now if I can find me a job, hopefully you guys can help with that one day. But all things are looking well.
Thank you, Mr. Thames.
Thank you, sir.
Any questions for the testifiers? Ms. Vitalis, if you'd like to finish up with your testimony, that'd be great.
Basically, one of the things that I'm also asked all the time, too, is that, well, when you help them, what happens? You know, do you ever stay in touch? Do you? I think you just heard that a year ago, yes, we stay in touch. And we have a very high success rate. You look at the different metrics in the different programs. Each grant has its own metrics. But the real key is the hard work that those veterans do. We are there to support them. But they do all of this hard work, and it's one of the most gratifying jobs that there is. So if you have again, we have our bill in. We'll just look forward to being able to answer any questions or hopefully get a hearing on it and see what happens as things evolve here over the next few months.
Thank you, Ms. Vitalis. Any questions for the testifier? Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity to get briefed on this, and we'll look forward to seeing you again in the short future. Members, before we adjourn today, we have some minutes that didn't get taken care of at the beginning. We were lacking a quorum, but Representative O'Driscoll, have you had a chance to look over the minutes? And if you could move them for us, we'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have. I moved the minutes of the meeting of the 31st of January, 2011.
Any additions or corrections to the minutes? All those in favor of the minutes signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. Motion's carried. Members, we will not be meeting next Monday, but the following Monday we'll hopefully have enough bills and things to talk about at that time. So with that, meeting adjourned.